lady, come my lady, you're my butterfly, sugar, baby. Come my lady, you're my butterfly, sugar, baby. Such a sexy, pretty little thing. This paper mission got me sprung with your tongue ring. And I ain't gonna lie, cause your loving gets me high. So to keep you by my side, there's nothing that I won't try. Butterflies in her eyes and her looks to kill. Time is passing, I'm asking, could this be real? Cause I can't sleep, I can't hold still. The only thing I really know is she got sex appeal. I can feel, too much is never enough. You always there to lift me up when these times get rough. I was lost, now I'm found, ever since you've been around. You're the woman that I want, so you know I'm putting it down. Come my lady, come my lady, you're my butterfly, sugar baby. Come my lady, you're my pretty baby, I'll make your legs shake, you make me go crazy.
I'm going to argue that we should replace the Electoral College with majority win national popular vote presidential elections.
Now, I know that might not be top of your mind for events that took place yesterday, but this is a very interesting thing that happened just last week. University of West Florida did a the Rumino Ask You political science unit did a debate about the Electoral College. Now, I think this is part of the, you know, the requirement that now colleges have to every year do these like informative discussions in Florida. But I think they have also been doing some of this stuff every year prior to this. So I don't know how this is necessarily responsive, whether this is necessarily responsive to that new rule or whether this is just kind of in place. But I will tell you this, it was great. I mean, it was fantastic. The discussion between Dr. Adam Clayton, on the one hand, who was arguing in favor of the national popular vote, the idea that, you know, we should just decide the president on the basis of the total number of people and how they vote. And then Dr. Alfred Kuzan, who was arguing in favor of the current system, the rather, you know, complicated and little understood and often maligned Electoral College process of selecting the president. And it was really, really, really good. And I wanted to take some time today to, you know, take you through some of these ideas because, you know, it's probably never going to be that day when this is like the first big news item. Okay. But sometime we got to talk about it because there is always this push on by particularly people who are liberal more often who say that the Electoral College is wrong for a variety of reasons. And I thought it was just, like I said, it was a fascinating, really, really good event. So we're going to do this today and talk about it and, you know, maybe give you a little bit more equipment in your intellectual vocabulary to think about this question of whether it's proper to select the president by the Electoral College through the states or whether it is proper to select the president by the national popular vote. So let's go through some of the arguments. This is Dr. Clayton again, or Dr. Caton, excuse me, arguing for the affirmative, essentially, to get rid of the Electoral College.
First, the United States is founded on the self-evident truth that we are all created equal. Yet the Electoral College gives greater weight to votes from less populous states, making, for example, a vote in Wyoming worth four times as much as a vote in Florida.
Because they get two senators and a representative in the Electoral College, and we get our, what, 22? Gosh, I forget how many now we have representatives now because we added a couple, plus our two, you know. And then if you divide that by the number of population, the vote per population is much greater in Wyoming. So they have a greater power to select the president than we have in Florida. How can that be right? Second. Okay, computer, hold on now.
It allows candidates to win without even plurality support and has done so four times.
Meaning if you do not get a majority, okay, first of all, in fact, you don't even need to have a plurality if the thing goes into the House of Representatives, right? Anything can happen. And so the person who would never have gotten even a plurality of the support can wind up becoming president of the United States.
It makes presidential elections appear more lopsided than they are, giving the winning side a false sense of dominance and making the losing side feel aggrieved and unseen.
Right. The real popular support could be very close, but you might win 60% of the Electoral College and feel like you've gotten a lot. And because of the winner-take-all system, you know, you could be Reagan, you know, and win every state but one, I think, in his re-election bid. And that makes it seem like 100% of the country supports you when it's 51% of each state, right, supporting you, which is a very different proposition.
It creates the impression that presidential elections are less representative than they are because many people think the Electoral College acts independently of the outcome of the vote.
Right. You know, it might create the appearance, and this was actually by design. Remember, the founders were very skeptical about direct anything, They didn't, you know, this notion that like the people are going to choose everything is not what they had in mind. In fact, if you'll notice, we don't have direct democracy. We have representative democracy. The people don't vote on anything on the national. There's no national referenda, right? What we do is we elect representatives to the House of Representatives. That's the closest thing to direct election by the people and representation you get. In the Senate, then you have two per state, and that was meant to be a compromise between big states and small states, and to make sure that the big states didn't just take over everything by their largeness. Okay, and then you have, of course, the president's check on that, but the president selected by the Electoral College was really, like, in the beginning, you know, in the beginning, you were picked by not the people. We did not have direct election of the president. The electors were selected by the state government. So it was indirect. You know, we would vote for the governor, we would vote for the House of Representatives and the Senate in the state, and then somehow or other the state would decide to send electors. And then they would pick the president. It was not meant to be. You know, it was definitely not meant to be a direct election by the people. And so it might seem like what used to be true and is not anymore is that the electors would pick. Of course, now that's not the case. We pick, and then that picks the slate of electors, and then those are all locked into who they vote for. So it gives this false appearance of being independent rather than being based on what the people decide.
It also allows small shifts in specific states to have massive effects on the outcome. This is bad because it causes most of the country to be ignored in favor of a handful of battleground states.
Right. There's no point in campaigning in California for president, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, because it is a locked up state right now for Democrats. Now, that can shift over time, of course, but there's no point in wasting your money there. Instead, you campaign in a handful of states, Arizona, you know, Wisconsin, Ohio, Georgia, used to be Florida, and we're maybe not a swing state anymore, right? You know, only those states are the ones who really get the campaign focus or the primary process, but that's not the same as the general election. And so there's only a very small number of people who even get campaigned to when it comes to the president because of the battleground states in the Electoral College, because, you know, if you got 55-60% support in any given state, I mean, that's a lock. Don't bother, right?
It makes presidential results contingent on random events, and it makes disputed elections more likely.
Because the geography that decides that your vote is in Wyoming or Colorado or Florida or Georgia is pretty arbitrary. And the fact that it's pretty arbitrary means that you don't have a sort of a system for figuring out whose interests are represented, the ranchers or the, you know, dairy farmers or the grain farmers or the makers of motor vehicles in Detroit or whatever. It's just kind of all of this weird stuff about what happened to be a state, and state boundaries are, of course, drawn in bizarre ways. Look at Florida. Why are we Florida? Everything west of Tallahassee should really be Alabama, but here we are, Florida. Why? Well, you know, what's the answer? There's no great answer. There's just history, right? And those things, that makes a difference in the presidential election. All the people who live on the panhandle, how we vote, right? And if you look at the geography of the United States, I mean, he's certainly got a point.
Finally, the administrative mechanisms of the Electoral College are very complicated, making it easy for the system to break down and prevent the lawful continuity of government.
Again, because it's complicated, because of things like, well, can the vice president just, you know, decertify the national vote? Can the members of the House, can they, you know, like, or the Senate, can any, who has power to do this? Well, they don't have the power that you think they have, or I should say that they don't have the power that Trump thought they had, you know? And so, well, that creates an issue that it can be perceived to have been taken away from people. So lots of good stuff, including, and this is just the one side, right? I haven't even gotten into the other side yet, and there's a lot more to this. But it was a really, really good debate. Now, answers, the short version, because I know not all of you are going to listen to all 4 hours, but we are going to podcast all of these segments kind of on their own so that you can hear this discussion kind of as a totality. But one of the reasons, okay, one of the reasons, or one of the, I think, key reasons for defending the Electoral College is the basic question of what's the unit of government for selecting, you know, the federal representative and the president. And the answer is it's not the people, because that unequal representation argument is very powerful. You know, why should somebody's vote in, again, less populous areas like Wyoming matter so much more than higher density population areas like Florida or California? Why should they have disproportionate power? Well, the answer cannot be that those people matter more. But the answer absolutely can be that because the federal government is not chosen by individual people. The federal government is chosen by states. States are the ones who decide who, it basically runs the country. Because we are not America. We are the United States of America. We are a federal system. And, you know, Dr. Kuzan made that point, and I thought made it extraordinarily well when he talked about, you know, the who exactly is the source of authority in the United States.
At the founding, 13 independent colonies voted to form a more perfect union, as the preamble of the Constitution proclaims, and they did so voting separately as states. Similarly, to amend the Constitution requires the assent of 3/4 of the states, each voting separately. Is there any wonder, then, that the method that the founders came up with for the election of the President of the United States, the single most important office of the federal government, would follow suit?
Exactly. Everything we did in, you know, the Declaration, to the Constitution, to the amendments, was written, chosen, voted on by states, not by people. I mean, if you look at the Declaration of Independence, it's all these signatures and individual names grouped by state, because it wasn't an individual vote of the majority of the delegates. It was the vote of the states. And in order to ratify an amendment, you need 3/4 of the states, because states are the things that decide what goes on at the federal level. And that's the point, is we don't elect the president based on people. We elect the president based on states. It's the one place where all the states come together and make a choice. And he says, and, you know, he says, and if you start with the idea that America is a group of people who have political authority, then sure, you go with the national popular vote. But if you start with the idea that America is a collection of states, then you don't do the popular vote. And you can't even object to it, because that's just not the way our system is designed. And he says, look, if you're really all that worried about the dilution of the vote problem, if you're really all that worried about making sure that each individual counts the same.
My vote is being diluted relative to another American who is equal to me, entitled to equal protection under the laws. And yet when I vote, it just doesn't count for as much. How do you explain why that's necessary or why that's beneficial?
Well, would you say the same thing about the Senate then? If you challenge the presidency on that grounds, what about the Senate?
This is exactly right. The person in Wyoming is worth way more in terms of representation in the Senate than the person in Florida. And that one's far more obvious, because you can just look at the populations of the states and each one gets 2 senators. So if you're going to say that vote dilution is the issue, it's not the presidency you should worry about, it's the Senate.
I mean, the logic would then lead you to say, well, we really shouldn't have 2 senators per state.
I'm not making that argument about the Senate.
Okay, but the logic, the logic of deduction would be that would be the next step, right?
He's exactly right. And would you say that the Senate itself is an unjust institution because every state gets 2 votes instead of every state getting a vote like the House of Representatives based on their population? So like I said, I mean, we're just kind of scratching the surface on this, but I wanted to give you a sense of the discussion. And I will tell you, as I was following along, I found the challenges to the Electoral College system to be persuasive when all laid out on their own by Dr. Adam Caton, who is, again, a professor at the University of West Florida. And then I heard the arguments in defense of the current system by Alfred Kuzan, and I found them to be more persuasive. If I'm just looking at it as an objective debate analyst, I thought it was really great. And so I want to give credit to UWF for putting this on. And I'll link, when we post, I'll podcast my commentary, and I'll also podcast the original debate if you want to listen to it. But very, very interesting. The kind of stuff a university should be doing. And it made me, honest to God, it made me kind of want to take their classes. Like, oh, man, I hope this stuff is going on in these classes. I hope it's this interesting. 524 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
I'm going to argue that we should replace the Electoral College with majority win national popular vote presidential elections. First, the United States is founded on the self-evident truth that we are all created equal. Yet the Electoral College gives greater weight to votes from less populous states, making, for example, a vote in Wyoming worth 4 times as much as a vote in Florida.
There is something about the Electoral College system of selecting for the president that seems patently unjust. I mean, the most obvious problem is that you have people who get elected to the president who do not have a majority of the popular vote. Well, how can that be right? You know, that seems fundamentally wrong. And if you look at more particular cases like Wyoming versus Florida, as Dr. Adam Caton at University of West Florida is pointing out in this debate that took place at UWF, it seems completely wrong that people in a less populated area, because of the Senate and because of the impact that has on the Electoral College, giving a place like Wyoming 3 votes when it really should have about a third of a vote, I mean, if you really do the math of it, then how is it possible that they get so much more influence over who becomes president? And, you know, places that are more densely populated like Texas, California, and Florida have much less representation. That seems fundamentally wrong. This was a great event that they put on last week, this discussion about whether we should go to a national popular vote or whether we should have, you know, the system that we have right now in the Electoral College. The response by Dr. Alfred Kuzan and the beginning, like this is, you know, Adam Caton gave a whole bunch of arguments. You know, it's a debate. He gave a whole bunch of arguments for getting rid of the Electoral College. And then Alfred Kuzan, the professor in response, gave a whole bunch of arguments in favor of keeping it. One of which is, well, look, if you're worried about vote dilution, the Senate is an even better example of that, obviously, because the Senate, everybody gets two votes no matter what size state you are. How can California and Wyoming get the same power in the Senate? That's ridiculous. And if that's your test of whether the system is correct, then not only do you have to get rid of the Electoral College, you have to get rid of the Senate. You have to turn the Senate into something like the House. Well, there are reasons that this was all put together. And the reason in part is because we are not a collection of individuals. We are a collection of states. Florida is a collection of individuals. But the country is a collection of states.
We need to understand that it is a federal system composed of states. And the federal government was built from the ground up. And that the presidency actually fits into that system. There are no other elections that are nationwide. All elections are by state, for the House, for the Senate, for the President. There are no national referenda, right? So it would be a completely different thing.
There's no such thing as a national election. There are a bunch of state elections, a bunch of state elections for the President. And then those states then comprise the Electoral College, which is not a name that's in the Constitution, of course. And that's how we pick the president. But you don't have federal referenda. If you want to ratify an amendment, we don't do that as a nation. We do that as states. And each state is a yes or a no on affirming the amendment, right? And then 3/4 get it and you get it. So he's pointing out that there's a basic misconception in the idea of the national popular vote mattering. And the basic misconception is that we are somehow a nation of individuals when, in fact, we are a nation of states, and the states are the key. And also that this entire system, and he quoted John F. Kennedy earlier about this, but that every piece in this system that is the federal constitution is designed to work in conjunction with every other piece. And if all of a sudden you do some aftermarket dramatic change, like, for example, go with the national popular vote, it's very hard to know in advance how that might throw the entire system out of whack.
Earlier, I quoted the then-Senator John Kennedy's solar system metaphor for the American system of government, in which the presidency is an integral part. Indeed, the structure is an intricate one with three branches of government with overlapping jurisdictions, the bicameral Congress, staggered elections in the Senate, and a judiciary of members appointed for good behavior. The system operates as the frame is intended.
Exactly. It does. And if you suddenly make the presidency separated from the authority and the original sovereignty of the states, then you might well get almost anything as an outcome. You know, maybe all of a sudden presidents don't have to care too much about certain states or a bunch of states because they're just looking for the large bases of popular electoral power, like, you know, big cities or California or something like that. It's just, it's hard to know in advance how this would throw things out of whack. And one of the things that, see, we don't do a good enough job of explaining civics and the logic behind the Constitution and the principles that make it work. Most of you know, okay, and most people who go through public education in the United States know that there is a check and balance concept in the Constitution. At least, if I didn't believe that, I would probably go home and cry. People may not understand how that works, why it works, but if you just say checks and balances, the average American, 50%+, I gotta believe, understands that idea. Now, how it works needs some explaining, but even the Electoral College system is part of the check and balance. I'll explain in just a second. Back to this conversation that was held at UWF last week. Very, very great. I mean, like, I was really impressed. This is fantastic stuff that they were going through. And I'm glad they did this. And I think everybody, this is almost like I wish everybody should study this, which is what I'm doing on the radio, because I think this is really important stuff that you're just not going to get in the nightly news. You're not going to get in our typical newscast. And I'm not, you know, I'm going to go over the county commission meeting and the city council meeting. And you don't get this, okay? But this is the bedrock of everything else that we do. If we don't understand this, then all of a sudden people are voting for the proposal for a national popular election, or they're voting for the workaround that would make it so. And every year we get a bill filed like this in Tallahassee that, you know, Florida will change to a system where we become part of the National Popular Vote Compact, where if enough states whose popular votes put together, or whose electoral votes put together comprise more than half, like enough to win the election, then we all agree to pick our electors based on the national popular vote. And that there are several states who are a part of this. That is a movement in this country. I don't think that movement's going to work, but it is a movement. Anyway, so back to what Dr. Alfred Kuzan, a teacher at UWF, was a professor of philosophy, professor of political science at UWF. What he was explaining is that there is a check and balance value to the Electoral College. And what that means is you're going to create division in your government. You know, people often complain that Congress is ineffective and doesn't operate very well or very efficiently. Awesome. It's not supposed to. It is supposed to be slow, clunky, inefficient, and frustrating. You know why? Fast governments exist under totalitarian states where you have a king or you have a dictator, and they can do what they want quickly. You don't want quick government. Quick government is always bad for the people. And when things are really pressing, you know, like Pearl Harbor, okay, you get quick government. Why? Because in a real emergency where there's a really obvious right way to go, we get that right way. Otherwise, you want division. You want separation of power. You want one part of government checking or balancing another part of government. And we tend to think of things like, you know, the executive in the White House checks the Congress, and the Supreme Court checks the president and the Congress. Okay, all true. But there is a way in which even the Electoral College operates as a check.
Since 1880, 60% of presidential winners have been Republicans, while during the same period, Democrats have controlled the House about 60% of the time, and the Senate approximately 55% of the time. Thus, divided government has been, though not the rule, frequent enough and with increasing frequency since 1994 to check overwinning ambition or overreach by one or the other of the elected branches.
In other words, the House representing more sort of popular vote mechanics, right? Because it's more close to that system. You get 60% control by Democrats. The presidency, you get 60% control by the Republicans. Well, how can that be fair? Don't ask whether it's fair. Ask whether it's functional. It means that there's gridlock. It means that there's conflict in government. It means that you don't get quick government. You don't get violation of people's rights. When you have unified government, you're more likely to violate people's rights and do things that are bad long term. So balance comes from the disagreement being represented. And, you know, regardless of who gets the power source, if Democrats are getting Congress more or the House more and Republicans are getting the presidency more, that's actually a good thing for the country overall. And if you suddenly create this more streamlined system where the, you know, the popular vote winner gets the presidency, and that will no doubt favor Democrats, okay, under the way things are laid out right now, well, all of, I mean, and so it's no surprise why Democrats are in favor of this system. But, you know, even Democrats should recognize that there's a value in the slow, frustrating, annoying, clunky, dysfunctional check and balance system that we have in place. That's done pretty well for us for a couple of hundred years. And the other thing is, you know, we have this mistaken notion, as Dr. Kuzan pointed out, that it's what counts and what we think should count. And a lot of times we just kind of think, well, the individual vote should count, and therefore it's not fair that, you know, the individual vote winners, even though the system is not built to produce individual vote winners, right? They don't campaign to get individual votes or the national popular vote. They campaign to get electoral votes. So you can't really say what the system would produce if we had a national popular vote as the decider, because nobody's ever campaigned for that to be the outcome. And it might well turn out very differently if they did, because everybody's gaming now for the Electoral College win. So you don't know what you would get. Much like in baseball, you know, if you were, or you could, there's any metaphor for any number of sports here, but let's take baseball. If the winner of the World Series was the team that got the most runs total over seven games, that would be very different from the winner of the World Series being whichever team can manage to win four individual games. Just like if you made football a particular game, let's say, or even who would go into the Super Bowl. Let's say the Super Bowl becomes the total number of points or even yards, the total number of yards you get over the course of the season. Well, that might produce an incredibly different result from the number of wins you get over the season, right? And that's the point. Once you pick a system, you can't then complain that that overall system is not producing the result you want, because the people don't play the game according to the system that you want. They play it according to the system that we actually have.
In the World Series, who wins the pension? Well, it is not the one that scored the most runs. It's the one that won the most games. They got 7 games, and you can win 4 games with only 1 or 2 runs because you fought it out the other team. And the other team scored 12 runs, and yet they lost. So that's just the nature of the game.
I mean, it's right. You could have 2-1, 1-0, 1-0, 3-2. You could have a plus 4 run total in the 4 games that you win, and you could have a minus 50 run total in the other 3 games, and it wouldn't matter. And that's the point. The system is built around the way we count what matters, and there's a variety of other reasons, but you can't necessarily argue that look at what would happen over it. Now, the argument that people for the popular vote will say is, well, fine, but we think it turns out this way. Let's try it. And the conservatives, not because they're like philosophically attached to winning the election that they win, but because they don't believe change for change's sake is good. Like, conservatives think that we should generally keep a structure until you're sure it's got to go. Because if it's worked pretty well so far, don't tinker. You know, progressives tend to think, no, tinker with everything. Everything is open for grabs. Conservatives are like, well, maybe the reason it's worked, you don't understand. Maybe we don't understand. Let's just keep doing it how we're doing it. And, you know, to that point, it's working really well compared to every other country, you know, where things have been a little bit different in a lot of cases. 437-1627. Anyway, this is a really good conversation. I'm so glad they had it at UWF. And my big thanks to Adam Caton, Professor Adam Caton and Alfred Kuzan, who led the conversation, the debate, which by their own admission is not their favorite thing to do and they'd never really done before. 624 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. 713 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. One of the other interesting things that happened yesterday is, not yesterday, but this was such a good conversation. I've been talking about it a bunch this morning because I think it's important that, you know, we believe in civics. We believe in it in Florida, you know, you have to pass a civics exam. It's pretty rigorous, by the way. It's much more rigorous than anything I ever had to pass in school. And I mean, like, you got no Supreme Court cases, which is great. I mean, it's really good. People ought to know this stuff. But there's this ongoing conversation about having a national public vote for the president rather than having the Electoral College pick the president. And I do understand. I understand that people don't understand the system very well and don't know how to defend it. And don't know, well, how is it possible that we elect a president with the Electoral College even though they don't win the popular vote? That doesn't seem right. And by the way, when your two professors at UWF were debating on this recently, wonderful debate, really, really interesting debate. You know, Adam Caton, who was arguing to reform it and go to the national popular vote, says, look, if we don't do this, we're inviting nightmare scenarios.
The first is a repeat of the aftermath of the 2020 election, except the attempt to overturn the result works. The U.S. would then find itself with an unlawful president, and we would see a rapid descent into civil violence, potentially war, potentially the military having to make a difficult decision over who the actual president was. If other countries are any indication, this would be a point of no return for the Republic.
And his argument is kind of two parts. Part one is that the Electoral College system invites challenges, allegations, and problems. It's not that a national popular vote wouldn't invite those, but the power to sway just a couple of key states by fraud or something along those lines is more potent in the Electoral College system, because when, you know, every vote counts, the marginal value of engaging in election fraud in any particular place, in any particular polling place or even, you know, city goes down, because you have to get so many votes to make a difference and you don't have the leverage value that certain locales, swing states, do in the current system. And just the possibility that you could try to persuade, you know, members of Congress not to go along, or alternate slates, or all the things that, you know, President Trump did. Okay, so that's one possibility. The other possibility is just the problem of, it looks like the president's not legitimate when they win the Electoral College rather than winning the popular vote. Now, they are legitimate, But it just it doesn't look like it for people who think that the national popular vote is the source of legitimacy for the president.
The second scenario is that a party, most likely the Democrats, would lose consecutive presidential elections despite winning the popular vote and would simply refuse to accept it, or would treat the president as so illegitimate that governance would become impossible.
Right. And because there's this narrative being sold in the media a lot, on TV, you know, well, they lost the popular vote, but they won the Electoral College. That doesn't seem right. There's a lack of educating people about why that's not the right way to look at it. But that is the way a lot of people look at it because they haven't been properly educated about the topic. And he's basically saying, look, whatever benefits you might think of for the Electoral College are outweighed by some of these risks.
I don't think this institution can withstand the pressure it's under, and I don't think the arguments in favor of it, which there are some good ones, justify the risk that it poses.
Yeah, and that's those are fair concerns, really genuinely fair concerns. And the other side, which was argued by Alfred Kuzan, another professor at UWF, very capably, we'll get to in just a second. Again, I want to give great credit to UWF and the political science department for putting this on, and you know, the School of Government for Ruben Odiescu. It's really good stuff, the kind of stuff that you want to believe is going on all the time at your institutions of higher learning. The kind of thing that, you know, reminded me of why I loved college and why I loved teaching college. And just these are important discussions to have because there is a move right now. There's a big move in the nation to switch us over to a national popular vote without changing the Constitution. Many states have already ratified the agreement that it's called the National Popular Vote Compact, I believe is the name of it, where they agree that if you get a threshold of enough electoral votes in states that have passed this agreement that would elect the president, then they promise not to give electors to what their state decides, but to give electors to what the national popular vote is, which is a crazy system since we're not campaigning to create the national popular vote. So we would actually be deciding, you know, the World Series on runs and not games, or the, you know, the Super Bowl on total yards in the season rather than games and record and all that. So it's a bizarre thing that they're trying to do. It might not even be constitutional. Who knows? But it is under, like, there are states who have signed on to this. It's a big deal. So the response on the other side, and again, I appreciate Dr. Alfred Kuzan for giving this, is he says, look, every other decision that we made in forming this government, in ratifying the Constitution, in ratifying the amendments, these are all state-by-state decisions. They are not person-by-person decisions. So states with a three-quarters majority approve amendments. States approve the Constitution. And states, whether you like it or not, are the ones who form the national government. We are not a United Peoples of America. We are a United States of America. And so states pick the president. And in fact, when you go into the House of Representatives, if you had to pass the Electoral College, you vote by states. You have to win a majority of the states. So there is something to be said for the idea that political authority in this country for the presidency does not flow from me as a person. It flows from Florida and Massachusetts and California and Louisiana as states. And so the complaint that they don't win the popular vote is, who cares? That's not where the authority comes. We don't elect anybody else nationally. We don't get to vote on national referenda. Everything is done by state because we are the United States. And that's an important point to remember. And so complaining that it doesn't produce the result that the national popular vote does is genuinely, it does not matter. That is completely irrelevant to the equation. And, you know, he said this a couple of different ways, including saying that, you know, we just don't pick the system that way. It doesn't work that way. You're talking about something that's like sort of fantasy land stuff.
We need to understand that it is a federal system composed of states, and the federal government was built from the ground up, and that the presidency actually fits into that system. There are no other elections that are nationwide. All elections are by state, for the House, for the Senate, for the president. There are no national referenda, right? So it would be a completely different thing.
It would be a completely different thing than what we have. And what we have, we know works. What we have is a complicated, difficult, challenging, checks and balances, frustrating system of government that has produced a pretty good country for more than 200 years. Even if you don't totally understand it, even if you don't particularly like it, this does work very well. So the other question that got asked, and I thought Adam Caton was right for bringing this up, is the problem of people in smaller states have more power to elect the president than people in larger states like Florida. How do you answer that issue of vote dilution?
My vote is being diluted relative to another American who is equal to me, entitled to equal protection under the laws. And yet when I vote, it just doesn't count for as much. How do you explain why that's necessary or why that's beneficial?
Well, would you say the same thing about the Senate? Then, if you challenge the presidency on that grounds, what about the Senate? I mean, the logic would then lead you to say, well, we really shouldn't have two senators per state.
I'm not making that argument about the Senate.
Okay, but the logic, the logic of deduction would be that would be the next step. Right?
He's exactly right. Why should the Senate be figured out any differently than the House of Representatives, right? If the vote dilution issue is a problem, then why do small population states get the same representation value in the Senate as large population? Because of this complex series of compromises and interests represented and the structure of a system that was all designed to work together in a very particular way. And when you start tinkering with it and running these populist arguments about the presidency or then about the Senate, you fundamentally change what we have as a series of institutions. That's the problem. Anyway, I wanted to cover this with you because there's never going to be a time where this is like the breaking news of the day, okay? But it's important. And how we think about these issues is whether we're informed enough to make good decisions about who we send to Congress or who we send to the State House and what kinds of policies they advocate for. And ultimately, what is the basis of our system of government and who's got the right political authority? And why is the newscaster on NBC at 10 o'clock on election night, you know, whining about how the person who got elected president didn't win the popular vote? Just wrong. They're just wrong about how this system works. 4-3, or maybe they're not ignorant of it, but, you know, making that case is not as easy as they make it sound.